Thanks, guys. Tim, alcoholic.
Yeah.
All right, so we're on a page 136, to employers. One of the few texts in the book that's not written by the big book authors. It's written by a specific person. And once we get into that, we'll talk about some of those details. So this is also the third chapter of our Al-Anon chapters. Chapters that are geared towards the non-alcoholic, but as I've said several times, I think there's a lot of good information in here for the alcoholic, the sponsor, and just how we deal with other alcoholics on a in our sober network. So, let's get going. To employers. Among many employers nowadays, we think of one member who spent much of his life in the world of big business. He has hired and fired hundreds of men. He knows the alcoholic as the employer sees him. His present views ought to prove exceptionally useful to businessmen everywhere. But let him tell you. So this is the only paragraph that's written by the big book authors. It now leads us into a text which is written by Hank Parkhurst. Hank Parkhurst was AA number 5, and he was the first guy that Bill Wilson got sober in New York after he got back to the city. And Hank Parkhurst, as it alluded to in the first paragraph there, where it says he spent much of his life in the world of big business, he was a salesman, a sales manager actually, at Standard Oil. So he was a hard-driving guy and knew the alcoholic very well because, as it turns out, he was one of us. He was also instrumental in coming up with the stock scheme, the Works Publishing stock scheme, so that we would be able to collect money in order to get the book published. And he also wrote The Unbeliever, first edition, The Unbeliever. That's Hank's story. It's not in the big book now because he did end up going out and drank. Soon as the big book was published, he lost his sense of purpose, lost all the information he had, all the self-knowledge he had went out the door. And him and Bill were at loggerheads for quite some time. And I think it was 15 years later, in the early 50s or the mid-50s, he died at age 57, active alcoholic. And he's also referred to in the doctor's opinion. He's the guy with the gastric hemorrhage. He's the guy that Dr. Silkworth is referring to and not recognizing him. And so you can see you can have a spiritual experience. You can be instrumental in doing great things. I would also go so far as to say he's a contributing editor of the big book. When you see there is a book that Hazelton has put out of a scanned example of the working manuscript, and you see his handwriting all over the border. So he was instrumental in a lot of aspects of the big book. The primary thing I'd give him, though, was that Bill, although he's the creative force, the primary creative force, he did suffer from depression, and he went, you know, fits and starts, and he'd get going. And no, Hank Parkhurst cracked the whip and made things happen. So if it wasn't for him, the book may not have come to completion. So let's hear what Hank has to say. I was at one time assistant manager of a corporation department employing 6,600 men. One day, my secretary came in saying that Mr. B insisted on speaking with me. I told her to say that I was not interested. I had warned him several times that he had but one more chance. Not long afterward, he had called me from Hartford on two successive days, so drunk he could hardly speak. I told him he was through, finally and forever. My secretary returned to say that it was not Mr. B on the phone. It was Mr. B's brother, and he wished to give me a message. I still expected a plea for clemency, but these words came through the receiver. I just wanted to tell you, Paul jumped from a hotel window in Hartford last Saturday. He left us a note saying you were the best boss he ever had, and that you are not to blame in any way. Another time, as I opened the letter which lay on my desk, a newspaper clipping fell out. It was the obituary of one of the best salesmen I ever had. After 2 weeks of drinking, he had placed his toe on the trigger of a loaded shotgun. The barrel was in his mouth. I had discharged him for drinking 6 weeks before. Still another experience. A woman's voice came faintly over long distance from Virginia. She wanted to know if her husband's company insurance was still in force. 4 days before, he had hanged himself in his woodshed. I had been obliged to discharge him for drinking. Though he was brilliant, alert, and one of the best organizers I had ever known. So in that short two paragraphs, we've seen three suicides on his watch prior to him becoming involved in AA. But, you know, it does, and I'm sure we all have these stories, but I had two that really surprised me. They were not my sponsees, but they were fairly close friends in my old home group. But one had 5 years, and like all of a sudden the shine went off the apple, and he just wasn't that interested in the thing anymore. And he went out and he drank, and his secondary drug of choice was Coke, and could not get back in. 30 days, 20 days, he played this game for like a year, hung himself through frustration. He just didn't think it was going to work out for him. And another guy, it was actually even more of a surprise. The guy had 20 years. He was the most vocal guy in our Friday Big Book meeting. Always like sat outside the circle, but always like had gems to like nail you with. Like you'd think you had something and he'd go, he'd just go down a completely different road that would open my eyes to, a richer experience. And 20 years, went out, 4 months, hung himself. That quick. So, hearing those things constantly remind me how this is such a serious game. I mean, we joke around, the coffee, the cookies, we're playing games, we're out in the parking lot, we're doing all those things. But we're working on a very fatal illness. we're playing with fire. Here were three exceptional men lost to this world because I did not understand alcoholism as I do now. What irony! I became an alcoholic myself. And but for the intervention of an understanding person, Bill Wilson, I might have followed in their footsteps. So how is he understanding? He's understanding because he figured out, he was a synthesizer, he got all the information that was out there currently in 1935 and figured out that this illness was not solvable by self-will. It is beyond choice. The real alcoholic is beyond choice. The only choice they have is to do the work. My downfall cost the business community unknown thousands of dollars, for it takes real money to train a man for an executive position. This kind of waste goes on unabated. We think the business fabric is shot through with a situation which might be helped by better understanding all around. Nearly every modern employer feels a moral responsibility for the well-being of his help, and he tries to meet these responsibilities. That he has not always done so for the alcoholic is easily understood. To him, the alcoholic has often seemed a fool of the first magnitude. So again, meaning that the guy could just decide to stop. Because of the employee's special ability or of his own strong personal attachment to him, the employer has sometimes kept such a man at work long beyond a reasonable period. Some employers have tried every known remedy. In only a few instances has there been a lack of patience and tolerance. And we, who have imposed on the best of employers, can scarcely blame them if they have been short with us. Here, for instance, is a typical example. An officer of one of the largest banking institutions in America knows I no longer drink. One day he told me about an executive of the same bank who, from his description, was undoubtedly alcoholic. This seemed to me like an opportunity to be helpful. So I spent 2 hours talking about alcoholism, the malady, and described the symptoms and results as well as I could. His comment was, "Very interesting, but I'm not sure this man is done drinking. But I'm sure this man is done drinking. He has just returned from 3 months' leave of absence, has taken a cure, looks fine, and to clinch the matter, the board of directors told him this was his last chance. The only answer I could make was that if the man followed the usual pattern, he would go on a bigger bus than ever. I felt this was inevitable and wondered if the bank was doing the man an injustice. Why not bring him into contact with some of our alcoholic crowd? He might have a chance. I pointed out that I had had nothing to drink whatever for 3 years, and this in the face of difficulties that would have made 9 out of 10 men drink their heads off. Why not at least afford him an opportunity to hear my story? Oh, no, said my friend. This chap is either through with liquor or he is minus a job. If he has your willpower and guts, he will make the grade. So the point is, the executive has absolutely no idea what Hank talked about for 2 hours. Missed the whole point. I wanted to throw my hands up in discouragement, for I saw that I had failed to help my banker friend understand. He simply could not believe that his brother executive suffered from a serious illness. There was nothing to do but wait. Presently, the man did slip and was fired. Following his discharge, we contacted him. Without much ado, he accepted the principles and procedure that had helped us. He is undoubtedly on the road to recovery. To me, this incident illustrates lack of understanding as to what really ails the alcoholic and lack of knowledge as to what part employers might profitably take in salvaging their sick employees. If you desire to help, it might be well to disregard your own drinking or lack of it. Whether you are a hard drinker, a moderate drinker, or a teetotaler, you may have some pretty strong opinions, perhaps prejudices. Those who drink moderately may be more annoyed with an alcoholic than a total abstainer would be. Drinking occasionally and understanding your own reactions, it is possible for you to become quite sure of many things which, so far as the alcoholic is concerned, are not always so. As a moderate drinker, you can take your liquor or leave it alone. Whenever you want to, you control your drinking. Of an evening, you can go on a mild bender. Get up in the morning, shake your head, and go to business. To you, liquor is no real problem. You cannot see why it should be to anyone else, save the spineless and stupid. Again, referring to self-will. When dealing with an alcoholic, there may be a natural annoyance that a man could be so weak, stupid, and irresponsible. Even when you understand the malady better, you may feel this feeling rising. Even with people in AA, and I'm guilty of it too, sometimes I'm annoyed at the guy. Like, you did it again, right? A look at the alcoholic in your organization is many times illuminating. Is he not usually brilliant, fast-thinking, imaginative, and likable? When sober, does he not work hard and have a knack of getting things done? If he had these qualities and did not drink, would he be worth retaining? Should he have the same consideration as other ailing employees? Is he worth salvaging? If your decision is yes, whether the reason be humanitarian or business or both, then the following suggestions may be helpful. Can you discard the feeling that you are dealing only with habit, with stubbornness, or weak will? If this presents difficulty, rereading chapters 2 and 3. So that's, there is a solution and more about alcoholism. So that's steps 1 and 2. Right? It's not by mistake we're reading that, right? where the alcoholic sickness is discussed at length might be worthwhile. You, as a businessman, want to know the necessities before considering the result. If you concede that your employee is ill, can he be forgiven for what he has done in the past? Can his past absurdities be forgotten? Can it be appreciated that he has been a victim of crooked thinking? That's the mental part of the illness. Directly caused by the action of alcohol on his brain. That's the physical. So mental obsession, phenomena of craving, physical allergy, right? Those are the two aspects of the illness. I well remember the shock I received when a prominent doctor in Chicago told me of cases where pressure of the spinal fluid actually ruptured the brain. No wonder an alcoholic is strangely irrational. Who wouldn't be with such a fevered brain? Normal drinkers are not so affected, nor can they understand the aberrations of the alcoholic. So aberrations, I used my little trusty dictionary I always refer to, a departure of what is normal or expected. So this is like odd behavior kind of thing, right? Your man has probably been trying to conceal a number of scrapes, perhaps pretty messy ones. They may be disgusting. You may be at a loss to understand how such a seemingly above-board chap could be so involved. But these scrapes can generally be charged, no matter how bad, to the abnormal action of alcohol on his mind. When drinking or getting over a bout, an alcoholic, sometimes the model of honesty when normal, will do incredible things. Afterward, his revulsion will be terrible. Nearly always, these antics indicate nothing more than temporary conditions. This is not to say that all alcoholics are honest and upright when not drinking. Of course that isn't so. And such people often may impose on you. Seeing your attempt to understand and help, some men will try to take advantage of your kindness. If you are sure your man does not want to stop, he may as well be discharged. The sooner, the better. And why would we say that? If he doesn't want to stop, we'd want to not enable him. We'd want to help create the bottom. Because it's only in the bottom, the gift of desperation, that the channel opens up for us to do the work. But there is a caveat, and watch what he does here. He plays a very good game. You are not doing him a favor by keeping him on. Firing such an individual may prove a blessing to him. It may be just the jolt he needs. I know in my own particular case that nothing my company could have done would have stopped me for so long as I was able to hold my position. I could not possibly realize how serious my situation was. That's a bottom. Had they fired me first, and had they taken steps to see that I was presented with the solution contained in this book, I might have returned to them 6 months later a well man. But there are many men who want to stop, and with them you can go far. Your understanding treatment of their cases will pay dividends. Perhaps you have such a man in mind. He wants to quit drinking, and you want to help him, even if it be only a matter of good business. You now know more about alcoholism. You can see that he is mentally and physically sick. You are willing to overlook his past performances. Suppose an approach is made something like this. So you saw how he set the stage. The employer would know that it's a mental, physical thing, and he's already agreed that he could overlook past performances. That's sort of setting the stage, right? State that you know about his drinking and that it must stop. You might say you appreciate his abilities, would like to keep him, but cannot if he continues to drink. A firm attitude at this point has helped many of us. We see this even with spouses, right? They take a really strong stance, like, You know, you can't come back here. I've changed the locks. Sometimes that's the kicker, right? Next, he can be assured that you do not intend to lecture, moralize, or condemn. That, if this was done formally, it was because of misunderstanding. Misunderstanding of what? The illness. If possible, express a lack of hard feeling toward him. At this point, it might be well to explain alcoholism, the illness. And what would that mean? Doctor's opinion. That's really all you have to do. Say that you believe he is a gravely ill person with this qualification, being perhaps fatally ill. Does he want to get well? So that's, you've raised this. Remember, our message is supposed to be have depth and weight. Well, I got news for you. A fatal illness has weight, right? You ask because many alcoholics, being warped and drugged, do not want to quit. But does he? Will he take every necessary step, submit to anything to get well, to stop drinking forever? If he says yes, does he really mean it? Or down inside, does he think he is fooling you, and that after rest and treatment, he will be able to get away with a few drinks now and then? We believe a man should be thoroughly probed on these points. That's a great sales technique. That's pre-qualifying, right? Your success rate goes up when you pre-qualify, right? Be satisfied he is not deceiving himself or you. Whether you mention this book is a matter for your discretion. If he temporizes, and that just means avoiding making a decision to gain time. If he temporizes and still thinks he can ever drink again, even beer, he might as well be discharged after the next bender, which, if an alcoholic, he is almost certain to have. He should understand that emphatically. Either you are dealing with a man who can and will get well, or you are not. If not, why waste time with him? This may seem severe, but it is usually the best course for, particularly for the alcoholic, but even the hard drinker. If they're not really alcoholic, but they call in sick on Monday, their work is crap and whatnot, he's even suggesting they fire the guy anyway, right? He's saying that. After satisfying yourself that your man wants to recover and that he will go to any extreme to do so, you may suggest a definite course of action. For most alcoholics who are drinking or who are just getting over a spree, a certain amount of physical treatment is desirable, even imperative. Why? Because you can die from detoxing from booze. It's not a game, right? Go to the doctor. Even if you're not sure, go to the doctor. It's very important there, right? The matter of physical treatment should, of course, be referred to your own doctor. Whatever the method, its object is to thoroughly clear mind and body of the effects of alcohol. In competent hands, this seldom takes long, nor is it very expensive. Your man may fare better if placed in such physical condition that he can think straight and no longer craves liquor. So that there's the twofold illness again, right? That he can think straight, mind's clearing, and no longer craves liquor. Phenomenon of craving, right? So there it is again. If you propose such a procedure to him, it may be necessary to advance the cost of treatment. But we believe it should be made plain that any expense will later be deducted from his pay. It is better for him to feel fully responsible. If your man accepts your offer, it should be pointed out that physical treatment is but a small part of the picture. How many times do we see it that somebody goes to detox and rehab and they said, okay, I'm done. No. That, now we begin. We haven't started yet. right? The solution may not have been discussed in that procedure. It may have. There's a lot of rehabs that you go all the way up through the fifth step before you split, right? Which I think is a kind of a cool thing. But not all go that way, right? So the fact of the matter is after you come out of that treatment, you're really just getting to this point. Though you are providing him with the best possible medical attention, he should understand he must undergo a change of heart. That's the psychic change. That's transcendence. That's the complete 180. Not what I can get out of life, but what I can pack into the stream of life. That's changing our complete attitude and working in step 12. How can I help my brothers and sisters? And everybody's my brother and sister. That's a change of heart. To get over drinking will require a transformation of thought and attitude. We all had to place recovery above everything. For without recovery, we would have lost both home and business. Can you have every confidence in his ability to recover? While on the subject of confidence, can you adopt the attitude that so far as you are concerned, this will be a strictly personal matter, that his alcoholic derelictions, the treatment about to be undertaken, will never be discussed without his consent? It might be well to have a long chat with him on his return. We'll stop there tonight.